So the title of the talk tonight is Falling Apart but Waking Up. And it is really clear, not only in the Buddhist tradition, but more or less any spiritual path that you want to look at, that a real key to our spiritual growth is to deal with the issue of self and to undo the control that self has on our life and our consciousness. And basically, the Buddhist tradition says nirvana is impossible without dissolving the self, or loosening it, or opening it. And the reason is that although the self, we need it to function, we can't survive without it. But it tends to be a structure that limits our vision. So we're like a tunnel vision, you call it. We're kind of locked in a vision. The consciousness fits itself into a box called me. And we find that we just see a slice of reality all the time through the filter of me. The filter creates duality. Me and the world. And this separation is one of the side effects, if you like, the problematic places that our being locked in a me creates. Krishnamurti said that the whole tragedy of human existence lies between the subject and the object. Amazing quote. And we all see it, everybody sees it. Not only us, but anybody in the newspapers will see it if it goes too far. Too much ego, and you get Putin invading Ukraine, and you get wars being fought because the generals want to be important, and conflict all over the place because of too much me. So that's obvious. It's not a spiritual insight. But we feel it. You know, constantly we feel it. In small ways, the pain of being too much me. My needs, my ego, my defense, them, and us. It goes in all traditions. The Jewish tradition will talk about the voice of God as being a voice that's bigger than the me. And the example that I really like is the book of Eov, of Job, which is really such a beautiful book that I can't understand a word of it, because it's so, the Hebrew is impossible and the English is also not so easy. But anyway, but it's such a beautiful story, because And it's so Buddhist, because Job is struggling the whole book to understand the nature of suffering. And he cannot. And he's all the time locked in the self. And every time he tries to get an answer, he gets an answer from others or from himself or from his friend or whatever. It's about me. You did this and therefore you suffer. Or they did this, or you didn't do that, or it was like that, or the previous generation, or this. It's all about me. And he never got an answer until right at the end of the book, he got the answer from God. Finally, because he was so persistent, he really didn't give up. Really, it was so hot. And he didn't give up. And right at the end of the book, God spoke to him. And God didn't give him a human answer to suffering, which is because. There's no because at the end of the book. God spoke in a different language, not in the language of cause and effect and of the me. God spoke in the language of being and said, watch the playfulness of life. You think you can understand it? And it's such a good lesson for us. You think you know cause and effect, karma in the Eastern language? Can you understand karma? No. But watch the playfulness, the uncertainty. That's the nature of existence. So our problem is it just seems impossible to imagine anything else other than the me. And we grow up like that. I am happy. I am sad. I love someone or something or myself, or I don't. I need or I don't. I like, I don't like. I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm bored. Right here in our retreat, I'm restless. When's it going to finish? I want supper. I. And it's automatic. We don't really think any other way. So it's really hard to understand how we can look at things differently. And mostly because it's very, very immediate and fast. And we are in it. We are conditioned. From a few months after we're born, 24 hours, we got the message, you, 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 me, 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 me. And it's very strong. And especially because the self is needed to survive. And therefore, it's built out of protection. And we talked about it in the groups today. It's a mechanism of protection. And we do need it. We need to know where our boundaries are. Otherwise, we can't cross the road. We need to know what's good to eat or not. We need to know where our hands are. We need to think, talk, be somebody. So it's built from very strong need for survival. And the Buddhist image for that is that we're like a king. And we build ourselves a beautiful castle, which is me and my wonderful nice body, my house, my car, my life, my country, my friends, we build a castle. But then we realize it's actually a huge prison. And the king is inside a castle, but it's a prison. That's the image from the tradition. Big walls. Only, according to the picture, the tradition, the image, there is a window high up in the castle somewhere, a small window that's open in the walls. And through the window flies a bird. And the bird comes and says, you can get out of this castle. and my two wings will show you. And the two wings are the wings of samadhi and mindfulness, according to the tradition, concentration and awareness. So, how are we going to do this? The first thing is that Dharma has a very, very clear understanding. It's the sort of basis of the teaching, which is dependent origination, which says that the self is a construction and not a fact. That means the self is built continuously. So there isn't a self. There is selfing. There isn't a thing called self. There is becoming. And that's the language of the teacher, some part of the Buddhist language. Self is a verb and not a noun. Self is a movement and a creation that's constantly happening. When we go to sleep, it's gone. When we get up in the morning, wow, really fast, boom. I wish we had moments of bliss and freedom, just 5 minutes where I can wake up in the morning and not be anybody. No, right there. Oh my God, I'm Stephen again. I've had enough of that. Again, I have to be Stephen today. Oh my God. And we keep rebuilding and rebuilding through attachment, through needs. I see it with my grandchildren, especially when they say, Bali, there, Bali, Bali. A picture, a way, or a Theravada poem that I like, that kind of summarizes Paticca Samuppada, the dependent origination, in a nice poetic way, is if we sow a thought, we reap a word. We sow a word, we reap an action. We sow an action, we reap a habit. We sow a habit, we reap a self, a personality. We sow a personality and we reap a fate, our fate. So it all comes from construction, starting with the thought, starting with consciousness, actually, even before thought. So where to start is what we've been practicing here, is understanding that this being, this self, is made up of many things, is a compound, has many elements. Usually we don't pay attention to all the elements that construct a me. The pains, the difficulties, the needs, the thoughts, the memories, the angers, the history, the pains, the joys, the future, the fears, the all the time happening, and we make a summary, and that's me. We don't really look at how the me is actually made up of many, many things, including the body, the emotions, the different awarenesses, the senses, everything. And we tend to be, the self is a kind of a pyramid. At the top would be ego and a very obvious me, identity and so on, and we're often mostly on the top. And as we go down underneath, it gets more subtle, and there is more, at the bottom of the pyramid is more something more basic, which is just the sense of the subject, without any story or history or anything. It's just a sense of being hineni, if you like, being here. It's just a sense of being, basic being, is at the bottom of the pyramid. But anyway, the self is made up of many, many things. And so one first practice that will help us meet the self is to begin to break up the experience of self into its elements. And that's what we've been doing here. We get close. We get intimate. And last night we heard from Ilan a little bit about the aggregates, meaning in every experience it's made up of many things: perception, memory, body, consciousness, needs, feelings. They all come together when we have an experience, such as I want. So undoing that, we begin to see more clearly what this thing is that we're making and how we're making it. And the tradition has a nice image that if you look at any of those aggregates, that if you look at perception, if you look at what the body is, how we perceive the body or nature or the world, feelings, memory, what we know, consciousness, they are bubbles. They're like the bubbles when rain drops onto the floor, onto the ground. Rain makes a little bubble that goes whoop and bursts straight away. And that are these elements, these aggregates that make up our experience. Then when you look at them directly, they're nothing, they're bubbles. And when we do that, it really does open something. This breath, if we look at it from that point of view, then the experience of my breath is only one element of our experience of breathing. And there are many possibilities in one breath. My breath indeed, but maybe the breath is breathing me. So we're already not the most important element in it. And maybe it's the world breathing through us. So we're already out of the self into a bigger space. And maybe it's tiny little bits, moving sensations in the chest, in the tummy, each part saying something. And we see, oh, one breath is made up of many aggregates, many elements. And even it's not even a breath anymore, which is already, so the breath has no self. It's made up of many things. So we can't even say a breath, just like we can't say a person anymore. It doesn't make sense, a breath, because it's a whole world. There is a sutta that some of you know about already, the Bahia Sutta, which I won't go into because it's a wonderful story, but it's a long story. But anyway, this yogi from the south of India rushed to the north of India because he urgently had to meet the Buddha and get teachings. And he ran and he ran and he ran from south of India to north of India. I eventually found the Buddha having his supper or collecting food in his bowl. And the Buddha said, I can't teach you now. He said, but it's urgent, you have to teach me now. So the Buddha said three times, no. But he was so insistent that in the end the Buddha said, okay, I'll teach you, but it's got to be very short. And he basically said, if you pay attention to the senses, they take you out of the self. if there is seeing, there is just seeing. Where it, nothing else is happening. Seeing is happening. Hearing is happening. Knowing is happening. Tasting is happening. Touching is happening. If you really go into the senses, they don't have a building of any self there. It's just seeing. It's just hearing. And when you just go into that as the present moment experience of the senses, and it's what we're doing here, we don't build anything out of it. We had some wonderful retreats with families here in Indore, and they used to play a game with the children and bang a bell and then ask all the kids to tell us where they heard the sound. And the interesting thing was, none of them could agree. One person said, it's in the bell. Another person said, no, it's in the room. Another child said, it's in me. Another child said, it's in my ears. Another child said, no, it's not my ears, it's in my eyes. Another child said, well, it's someone else hearing it. And so on and so on and so on. In other words, there's no place. Where can you say sound is? It's just sound. And so the Bahia Sutta is really describing one way in which you can cut through the sense of building a me and other. Specifically, it says, if you just are hearing, just with the senses, you cut the whole chain of paticca samuppada, of the construction of a me. You just cut it. And there's no me made there. So you don't know the sound, it's just sound. It's not sound here or there, or there's no me and there's no world. Just sound happening. We can do it at any moment. This sense of undoing the construction, the automatic creation of a me and a world, the separation there. We're angry at somebody or something. What's happening? The summary will say, I have been hurt, I'm angry, and how can they say that? How can they do that? And I don't. But if we open that and watch that arising experience of anger, it's made of many things: feelings, body, hormones, other person, memories, vulnerability, pains, habits, defenses. Many, many things. Words, thoughts. So you ask, what's this anger made of? And that's already taking you to another place. And the same with a human being. What's this human being made of? And you're already in another place. There's a very nice text. Mara, who appears all the time in the tradition as the voice of the ordinary mind. Okay, the ordinary mind comes as a kind of a little demon called Mara, and appears to the Buddha all the way through. By the way, the Buddha, you know, was all the time the ordinary mind had turned up in his life all the time, but he saw it, that's all, and the ordinary mind disappeared. Anyway, Mara here, the ordinary mind, says to a nun, and it's good to know that there's many, many women, enlightened women, enlightened nuns in the community way back at the Buddha's time. So Mara said, Who made this being? He said to the nun, Sister Vajira, by whom are you created? Where is your maker? Where has this living being come from? And where does this living being go? And Sister Vajira said, what? Do you assume a being, Mara? Do you take a position that there is a being? There isn't a being. It's just a pile of fabrications, pile of constructions. You can't find a living being here. Just as when with a collection of pieces, there's the word chariot. Even so, when all the aggregates are believed in, then there is a convention. Convention means agreement that there is a being. And the Mara then was sad and says, Vajira, the nun, knows me. I better get going. So when we talk about mindful awareness, we're talking about an awareness that takes to pieces what is assumed, what we believe to be a fact. Vipassana is another word that works. Vipassana, seeing through things, seeing the elements of things, seeing into Tovana, in a word in Hebrew, seeing into. And we usually see into experiences like our knee is hurting. But here we're talking about seeing into an experience of the subject, being a person. That's also an experience, becoming a person, just like the knee becoming painful. We can look at that with Vipassana. And it's more on the ground. It's because it's basic. The subject, the me, is very basic. It's under a lot of what's happening. So it's more subtle, not so easy, but it's still possible to look at the person knowing the sense of assumption of me. There is an image in the text that when someone washes a cloth, they wash all the stains and the dirt. And what's left is the smell of soap. So the image is used specifically about the self. So we can use Vipassana to wash the cloth of our mind. Get rid of old memories, get rid of psychological patterns, get rid of clean automatic reactivity, clean voices that we don't want, clean this, clean attachments here, clean attachments there, whatever. But what's left is the smell of soap. And that is the self. And there Vipassana is still can clean it. But it's more subtle. It's under the stories of our life, the thoughts. We clean thoughts. Okay, I don't need this. Okay, thank you very much. I heard you. Thought about childhood. Okay, I heard you. Cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. But underneath there is a person. But that too is like the smell of soap is under. and we can clean that as well. And it's not only self of me, it's self in the world. This is more difficult sometimes to understand, but it isn't about just me assuming to be somebody, it's everything that we assume to be something that we know and regard and give a name to and a description to. And it's the same vipassana. We all assume this object that we know what it is, it has a use, it has a function, it has a limit. We all learned that. My dog wouldn't agree that it's a bell. My dog would look inside and say, where's the food? It's a wonderful dog bowl for dog food. We learned that this is a bell, but that's a learning. That's just, again, a construction. That's a sankhara. If we look at this vipassana with clarity and insight, we no longer know what that is. We look at it in many different ways, depending on how we look at it. It can be many things. It can be mystery. What is this thing? So when we look deeply enough at anything with the eye of vipassana, the eye of awareness, it goes to pieces. And the reason is that it's the truth of things. There isn't a world existing on its own. There isn't a self, there isn't a bell, there isn't a world, there isn't a tree, there isn't anything existing on its own. It is an interaction between the observer and the observed. When we look at a tree, we make the tree. There is something there, but it's us that turn it into a tree. We need them, just like quantum physics. Physicists know this, but they know it in molecules. Buddhists know it with everything, not just molecules. Quantum physics will say that the observer makes what you observe, but we know it from deep observation. We are making the world, we are building the world as we observe it. And the story that one of the Buddhist Theravada Thailand thinkers gave us an example, a football match. And he said, when you look at a football match, if you look at it quickly, yes, it's a football match. But if you try and ask, where is this, what makes this football match a football match? It's the ball? Yeah, but it's the ball when it moves, when it's the player, when it kicks, and it's the other player, and when there's many of them, and when there's audience, and when there's this, and when there's this, and when there's this, then you say football match. If you take it all to pieces, where is the football match? It's gone. There isn't such a thing. So everything is an appearance. It's moving, it's changing. The self is an appearance. Appears and it moves and it changes. And we are part of that. There isn't an existing world fixed, solid, and finished, and all we do is trying to learn what it is. We are part of that world that is making the world as we go along. The world is making us, and we are making it. So that's one way, the breaking up of experience, the truth of looking at experience directly is like bottom up. But there's a top down way of looking at and practice as well, of understanding the self and the dynamic nature of self And that's really to challenge the self as a thing. To use thinking, philosophers know this, or most, to challenge this assumption of a self. One of my favorite scenes in Monty Python, maybe some of you know where I come from. But anyway, the Monty Python in this, I forget, the Life of Brian, and there's a whole crowd of people, and there is this Brian up there on the window in kind of Jerusalem, Jesus figure, and he says to everybody, "You're all individuals." And they all shout together, "We're all individuals." Except one person who says, "I'm not." And someone nearby says, "Shut up." Beautiful. And we do know that we are not a thing. We actually know it, and we have to have the courage to really live that way. We know we're not a thing because we know we're not the same as we were when they're 3 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, 20. We know that for sure. But we also have an intuition that we're not the same person that we were yesterday. Or maybe not the same person we were 10 minutes ago. Somewhere in us we do know it, but we don't want to know that. We want the illusion of permanence. But if you look carefully, it's an illusion. And we meet it. We meet places where we're not a strong self. And I was mentioning it in the groups today. A moment of beauty, a moment of grace, a moment of joy or love takes us out of ourselves. In the zone, if we're sports people. Many, many places and times where we just don't feel a subject in a world out there. We feel joined with the world in different ways. And at those times, what's intuition is we're made of life. Life is talking, not me. Life is happening, not me. We came out of life as a person, as a body. We came out. Life made us. And then we think, me, here I am. I have it. It's interesting. I just now heard that the English word exists, or existence, is made up of the Greek or the Latin of ex, exist, ex, and is. So ex is out, exit, out. Out of. So we are out of life. We exist means we come out of life. It's, if we really look, it's hard to find a self. If we really look, just what this nun was saying, if we really look, where is the self? I mentioned it on the Anatta course that I just taught. One or two of you here were with me, but I mentioned that when I was really quite young and starting to object and rebel against Jewish Orthodox life, I kept going to my father and said, which finger is Jewish? Is this finger Jewish one? Where is the Jewishness here? Can you show me? Like challenging this assumption. If we look carefully at, and you can say the same about the finger. Is this me? Is this really me? I remember at school one day when we left school, the British school, we did a game with all the teachers. We had all the teachers lining up, and there was the, on the stage, there was like 20, 25 teachers. They all lined up and without trousers. This is a male school. But the curtain came down to here. So we didn't see person, we just saw knees. So we saw 25 knees in a row. And then we had to try and guess whose knee belonged to who. And of course we couldn't, no idea which knee belonged to which person. Where is the me? The Buddha was once asked, where do we go after we die? And the Buddha said, can you see me now? When I'm alive and standing in front of you, do you know where I really am? Do you know where I am now when I'm standing right in front of you? Can you see me really now? So why are you asking about when I'm dead? So this whole practice, the practice of liberation, is about seeing things more clearly. It's about seeing the truth. You don't need belief for this. You need seeing. This is the practice of seeing. It's not the practice of believing. We're undoing the beliefs. It's the truth that frees, said great teacher, not the wish to be free. So it gives us support that we're not trying to kind of create some belief system. I must believe in God and not the self, and we don't have to do that. But we need to look directly at things, including the self, and we see that it's transparent. It's transparent. And it's a lot of that. We don't have to work too hard either, because the truth arises by itself. If we're kind of relaxed and just open and aware, letting the awareness grow, asking good questions, asking what's underneath things, the truth appears. We don't have to grasp it, because that's more the self. I must grab it, I must believe it. We're trying to undo the filter. There's a filter that makes us see life like this. That's the filter. So we see a little window. We want to undo the filter, so we see. And that doesn't, we don't do that with power, with force, by pressure. We do it actually by relaxation and opening, by sense of being open and aware and awake, and allowing the truth of things. Pressure to, I must concentrate on my breath. non-pressure would say, wow, here I am breathing and the world is breathing with me. Even for a moment we get an insight like that. And when we understand a bit more the limit of self, what happens is there's more space in the consciousness. The self takes a lot of room. What's happening is with this is the self takes room. The self comes and sits down and fills the consciousness like a big hippopotamus, whatever. Leviathan. When the self gets smaller, there's more room. There's more space in the consciousness. And when there's more space in the consciousness, what happens? There's more world instead of self. There's more sense of being instead of selfing. There's more isness when there's less meanness. There's more isness. And in the end, that's why the Buddha, as I said today, the Buddha called himself that instead of a person. That. That's the name he gave himself. It. That. Tathagata in the Pali language. Become that. That's me. Me. I've become that. So we have a question that I'm sure all of you feel is intuitively it's the right question. So I need to be a self because, like we said before, it's functional. I need to know to respond to life. I need to eat. I need to live. I need to run away from danger. I need to look after myself, my family, my whatever. And the answer is that we don't need to be against form. It's not that form is problematic. It's the way that we have made form exclusive and controlling us. So in the Heart Sutta, some of you know, which is the most famous sutta almost in the whole Buddhist texts, it's a Mahayana sutta. But it says about the five aggregates. The Heart Sutra is about the five aggregates, and the first is form. And it basically says form and non-form, or form and emptiness, or form and non-self are in intimate relationship. One is with the other. The language translated to English would be form is nothing other than emptiness. Emptiness is nothing other than form. You can say they're in constant flow and dialogue with each other. Form appears because we are born. It's happened. We're born. We're born into a form. We can't deny that. We're interested in the truth, not in some illusion that we that we don't exist at all. So form exists as a form, and emptiness exists as emptiness, and the two are in dialogue. And it's a mystery. In other words, the relationship between form and non-form is not something that the mind can easily understand. It's not a logical thing. It's not about Aristotelian cause and effect. When the Buddha was asked, so is there a self? He was silent. And when the Buddha said, so that if there isn't a self, then there's no self. And he was silent. And he said, he was asked, why didn't you answer? He said, if I said there was a self, it would be supporting views which are not true and not and false of permanent self. And if I said no self, it would be supporting a view of the permanence and existence of nothingness, emptiness, nothingness as a thing. So it's better to stay silent. In other words, it's in between. There's a relationship between form and emptiness. And we can play with that in our life. So when we need to be a self, we can play. Yes, I'm a form, I'm a self. You want to know who I am? Yeah, I'm Stephen, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Really, who are you? I have no idea. Depends how you ask the question. The question gives the answer. Both are true. I'm okay. Ajahn Amaro called it a convenient fiction. It's a fiction, it's a construction, it's an agreement, this self. Convenient, we need it sometimes, we need to know, you know, to answer the telephone, whatever. We need to be a self to function, to behave like a self to function. But it's, that's it. It's a functional convenience, a form. So we don't need to tear up our tudatsu or our passports. Mm-hmm. It's all right to have a passport. But you know, in the end, it's just a game. It's as we're behaving as if. And as we show our passport to the person or the machine when we go abroad or come back, we have an infinite free consciousness that is showing our passport. Thank you.